Alrighty, good evening. Welcome everyone to the Simple Actions group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name's BJ and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi BJ.
For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with a serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity
to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
The Simple Actions group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA simple actions. I will now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open Big Book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to step 12. Please help me welcome our panel this evening. We have Paul and Amy. Alrighty, I will read the first paragraph, which will be on page 89, and then the panel will share for a few minutes each on the reading. So, just as a reminder, step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. So, page 89. Practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. This is our 12th suggestion. Carry this message to other alcoholics. You can help when no one else can. You can secure their confidence when others fail. Remember, they are very ill. Life will take on new meaning. To watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends. This is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with the newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives. We're going to start with Amy.
My name is Amy, and I'm an alcoholic.
Amy.
My sobriety date is May 9th, 1994, and Simple Actions is my home group. I really think of step 12 as kind of a 10, 11, 12 thing, that kind of like step 1, 2, 3, I can't, God can, I'm going to let him. Step 10 is I bring my thoughts and feelings over which I have no control up to the level of awareness. I'm watching for self-centeredness. I'm realizing I can't do anything about this. I come to step 11, and what I've already seen in step 10 is that even if I knew the next right thing to do, I don't have the power to do the next right thing. So step 11 is the antidote to that. And in in a cleaned up frame of mind with access to a power greater than my own, there's nowhere else to go except to let that power greater than my own flow out of me in compassionate action. And compassion is not necessarily who I am, because that means that I am not a self-centered person. And when I first came around, I had a sponsor who said, immediately start cleaning up public restrooms when you're in them. Always take grocery carts back to the grocery store. Always do. And I still do those things. And I tell everybody that I do those things too. So that really does not count, because I'm a glory hound. And that really does not count as compassionate action, because compassionate action means there's nothing in it for me. And I would say that in the most difficult relationships, where it's sponsoring someone or working with another alcoholic and I'm not their sponsor, the most difficult times that I've had are when what's it foremost in my mind is, well, I have to do this because this is what keeps me sober. That makes it really heavy going. Because what I'm thinking about is the phone's ringing and I'm thinking, oh, I'm going to be on the phone for the next 30 minutes listening to a bunch of chaos. Haven't I just worked my butt off in 11 prior steps so that I could have a little peace of mind, and now somebody's going to piss in my ear. So it does not work out for me to come to step 12 thinking I have to work with others, because nothing quiets the imperious urge like doing this. And I know the imperious urge is referring to sex, but really, it feels like an imperious urge if I want to drink, or I want to drug, or I want to screw, or really if I want to eat too. So I have to come to this with the clarity of mind and the cleanness of spirit that step 10 and step 11 afford me. And I don't know how great I am at this. What I do know is that there are many of you who are great at this. Because when I first got sober, I don't know how anyone could even be in the same room with me. I mean, my mind, of course, was a million miles an hour. And my mouth was, too. Just constant, just addictive talking. Just rah, 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 rah. And so much angst, it was just oozing out of my pores, and I just wanted to deposit it on anyone who could carry the load for me for any period of time. Just relieve me, please. You know, I was like a little dog jumping up on everyone saying, relieve me, relieve me, relieve me. I didn't really want a cure at that time, because that might involve some radical change, but I wanted some relief. And there were a lot of really wonderful people in these rooms who would let me come to their house and just sit there while they were with their family. I learned how to do laundry from people in AA. I learned how to pay bills. I had never done any of those things. I really had never done anything for myself when I showed up here. And there were people who just had so much patience with me. And I really wish that I could tell you that I have become a patient and tolerant and kindly person, and that I freely give of my time and I do whatever, and I don't know that my motives are that great. But what I can say is that when I show up and do the work, God really gets to have his way with me. I give him a little room to maneuver, and he begins to change me. A month ago, I went to the Bird Neck Detox, and definitely not where I wanted to go, not a classy joint, was not going to be great. But I went, and the fourth lost soul that shuffled in the room was my niece that I had kicked out of my house months before, who looks even closer to death than she did the last time I saw her from cirrhosis. And those things miraculously always seem to happen. Just like every time I open the big book, what I read is the exact thing that I needed to read. It just, God always meets me wherever I am. And so working with others also meets me where I am. It is the only antidote to my self-centeredness. Mm-hmm. And even though I might go into it begrudgingly because I'm selfish with my time, and, you know, I want to be a Toys R Us kid forever. I want it to always be fun. And that's not always so much fun. But what happens is that I end up with all this gratitude. And I end up hearing myself saying things that I need to be saying to myself, that I need to be. What happens is that I'm living what I'm saying. Instead of just saying it, I'm actually living it in the course of doing this. And I think that's, that for me is the miracle of the entire Big Book, is that it all builds on each other. If I'm willing to do one thing, then the results of that give me some faith, they give me a little power, and it moves me on to the next thing. Like, maybe I'm not willing to do all of my step 9 amends immediately, but I start with the ones that I am willing to do, and I get a little power. I get access to a power greater than my own. I get a little bit of some spiritual flow, I guess, and it kind of gently scoots me on to the next thing. And that's really what happens with this for me, with this working with others thing as well. So that's all I'm going to say.
Thank you. Hey, BJ, I'm going to be honest. I think I blew it. I should have gone first. hey, everybody. My name is Paul, and I'm an alcoholic. Hey, my sobriety date is April 10th of 2010. And man, just the first thing that you read was the step, right? Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. There's 11 more before this, right? And when I get to this step, hopefully I've learned something about my selfishness, self-centeredness. I know a little bit about my problem, right? I don't have a drinking problem. I have a sober problem that I like to pour alcohol all over. And, you know, I have to go through those steps and be beat down enough to be willing to know that I don't know, to actually learn this information so that I can transmit it to somebody else. And thank God I was destroyed when I came in here and I came crawling into you guys. And even then, it took me a year sitting dry in the program to be humbled by life sober enough to be willing to do anything different and to listen to you. And there's a couple things that are really key that I had to really learn to make very simple so I can give this to other people, right? I have to know that I have an allergy when it comes to alcohol, which simply means, like, once I start drinking, I have no idea really what's going to happen, but I get awfully thirsty. I don't know if that sounds familiar, but once it touches my lips, I want to go. And sometimes I won't get destroyed drunk, but other times I'm blackout, you know, butt up drunk, and it's embarrassing, and I can't wait to do it again, right? Which brings me to the other part, which is the obsession of the mind. So I've got this allergy, but I've also got this mind that will just not stop working on me. It's always just thinking, this isn't good enough, you're not good enough, I deserve more, and I just can't take it anymore, so I'm going to drink, of course, because alcohol is the only thing that's ever shut my brain off. Right? It's the only thing that's ever stopped me thinking about me long enough that I can exist, which is what it is, right? But I don't know that coming in here, dude. I don't have any idea. My life's just on fire, and I want somebody to put it out for me. And so I glom on to somebody, like a little baby koala bear, and I'm like, oh, God, help me. And he takes me through the steps, and I learn this stuff, right? And it's weird, too. I've read this like a bunch of times, but I've never seen this exclamation point here. It says, carry this message to other alcoholics, but like, carry it to other alcoholics. It doesn't really put a lot of different punctuations other than periods in this book, right? There's not a whole lot of exclamation marks. Apparently, it's important. And I've had a lot of experiences with the 12 steps, so I'm trying to break it down and keep it as simple as possible. But yeah, nothing will keep you sober like seeing some new guy ripping his hair out, about to drink for the first few months of his sobriety. It reminds you, right? Because eventually I forget, because I am a great forgetter. I will totally forget the horrible pain I caused, the sadness I brought to people in my life. I'll forget how bad it was when I came in here, how many times I almost died drinking. I forget all that, like, at the drop of a hat, dude. And so, you know, helping other people is a great way to be reminded of, this is insane. Because in my head, like, I just talk myself into a drink. Like, it just makes sense. It all makes sense. And then when I see other people going through, I'm like, oh my God, like, I do not want any part of that. It says that life will take on new meaning. I don't know about you guys, but I'm so incredibly self-centered. I truly don't care. Like, I just don't care about other people, dude. Like, that's just the point of it. And I'm learning that through the program, right? Like, I'm a few years in, whatever. I'm learning compassion, kindness, tolerance. You were kind of alluding to that. Like, I just don't bring that to the table. It's not Paul Jeffries. I'm a very selfish, I'll help you if there's something in it for me. Or I'll do something for you if I get something in return. And that's what I bring to the table. But it was told to me really early on that when you see a new guy at a meeting, you walk up to him, reach out your hand and say, "Hi, I'm Paul Jeffries," or "Hi, I'm so-and-so." Like, you reach out to these, to new people. And because if somebody hadn't done that to me, I don't know what would happen, guys, but it wouldn't be good. Like, if nobody talked to me when I first came in the program, I'd be lost. I can't even imagine, dude. And I will share this experience. I had this guy that I'm sponsoring right now, and he's just a young Navy guy, and he was at our meeting over at our home group meeting, which is AA 101. It's over at the hospital Sunday mornings at 11. Little plug, no big deal. But he came up. I talked to him after the meeting one Sunday. And we exchanged numbers and we talked and we identified with each other and it was cool. And I called him a couple days later and we talked, and then I called him back the next day and he's like, "Well, I'm going to be honest with you, man. Like, you're the only person that's called me at all or reached out to me. Like, would you be my sponsor?" And I've seen that guy grow in the few months that we've worked together into a completely different human being. And I've got to tell you, I love what you said, where it's like, hey, if I'm telling somebody to do something, I better make sure my house is in order and I'm actually doing that. Because I'll spout a lot of good stuff. Like, oh, in my head, I'm like, man, that sounds great. And then I'm like reflecting afterwards, I'm like, am I doing any of that? A lot of the times the answer is no. I'm going to be really honest with you guys. So sponsorship's amazing because you're helping other people, but you're also getting so much in return. You're seeing your own shortcomings. You're remembering how crazy your life was when you came in here. And it's just, it's that psychic change. Like, I am not that person. But to be taught that in this program and to help other people, you know, I know we're talking about alcoholics right now, but I mean, even if we're helping our family, friends, I didn't ever call my grandma because I didn't care, because it had nothing to do with me. I'm just not that guy. I cannot stress that enough. But helping other people and being of service to other people, especially other alcoholics in this program, is a gift. It's not even a step. I mean, that's a friggin' gift. And I'm so happy to be able to do that whenever I can. So that's what I got on that.
Thank you, guys. The next reading is on page 91. See your man alone if possible. At first, engage in general conversation. After a while, turn the talk to some phase of drinking. Tell him enough about your drinking habits, symptoms, and experiences to encourage him to speak of himself. If he wishes to talk, let him do so. You will thus get a better idea of how you ought to proceed. If he is not communicative, give him a sketch of your drinking career up to the time you quit. But say nothing for the moment of how that was accomplished. If he is in a serious mood, dwell on the troubles liquor has caused you, being careful not to moralize or lecture. If his mood is light, tell him humorous stories of your escapades. Get him to tell some of his. Amy.
I love, like every other part of the big book, that their exact directions on how to do this. I have a tendency to make up rules as I go, and it never really turns out that well. So this is great that this says to me, here's what you do the very first time. And it's something I can do because I love talking about me. And all that I need to do is let this other person know you're in a safe space here. You can show me your tail, and there ain't going to be anything that I haven't seen before or done before. It's all going to be okay. Nothing is required of you. Because that's something that turns me off about churches or organizations or whatever, is that there's always some, you know, a price to be paid. And I know there's a price to be paid, leveling of pride, blah blah blah, but I mean on a different level. What I mean is, you know, I'm not doing this for whatever Positive Thinkers of America, you know, so that I can go up in the ranks or whatever. They're not going to have to do anything except sit there, and thank God for that, because I couldn't really I was shell-shocked when I got here. I just, you know, had done my best to obliterate every firing brain cell that I had, and having lived most of my life as a heat-seeking missile for approval and affirmation and fun, anything that did not involve those things was really of no interest to me. And so here's a chance for me to, just by telling the truth about myself, let someone else feel okay for a minute, because I didn't feel okay. I never felt okay. I mean, whether I was drunk or sober, I never felt okay. I was uncomfortable in my own skin. If I was here, I wanted to be there. If I was with you, I wanted to be with somebody else. It just was never good. But this, it was my first opportunity to kind of take a breath and not feel, I mean, I do still kind of feel like a divalo, but I, you know, having spent all of my life as the devil of my family, sitting down with somebody, and actually the first time that I ever had this experience was when I went to Alateen, and I was maybe 9 or 10 years old, and the Al-Anon sponsor that I had said, "Tell me what's going on. What's happening in your life?" And I told her that I had a notebook, and that in my notebook I collected, I've never told anybody this. Ooh. I collected ways that I could kill my parents. I did. I had a notebook. I was a writer. I've always been writing things down. And I told her that, and I thought, for sure, I am dangling over the pit of the acid lake. It is going to be nothing but hellfire from now on. And that woman looked at me and said, "That makes sense to me." And it was incredible. It was incredible. I mean, I'm 50 years old. That happened when I was 9 or 10. I remember it like it was yesterday. I remember the woman's name. I remember everything. And so, to have your, I'm so curmudgeonly. I mean, I don't talk about working with others in terms of what a gift it is, but it is a gift. It really is. What a gift to be able to offer that to another person, that you're not the biggest devil on the face of the earth. You're not dangling over the pit. It's not going to be an eternity of acid lakes for you. That's incredible. And to be able to talk about it outside of any kind of moral terms. This is a disease. I have an illness. I have dis-ease. I have a lack of ease and comfort. And all I want is ease and comfort. And my thing that has been giving me ease and comfort isn't working that great anymore. Or my consequences are outrunning my ability to be in a place of, you know, whatever, whatever, whatever. It's a gift to be able to sit down with somebody and say, "Here's what I've done. Here's what I did." And then to be able to say, "And my life isn't like that anymore." I spoke, I told my story at the Oceanfront a month after my partner Pete died. And I really thought that I could not get up in front of a group of people, but, you know, that the ego part of me had been saying, "Oh, I'll be fine, I'll be fine, I'll be fine. You know, I'm a rock star. I'll be great. It'll be no big deal." But then, of course, the day came, and all I could think of was, "I'm going to burst into tears. I'll probably have a nervous breakdown. There's no way that I can do this. How could I possibly have thought I was going to do this?" But then my ego was too big to call the guy and say, "I can't do this. I'm bailing out on you." So anyway, I went and I did the thing. But what was really incredible was that, and I mean, I did cry, because I'm not a robot, even though I want to be a robot, because I really don't want to have any feelings. I just want to operate on my programming. But I did tell the story, and when I walked away from it, what I was thinking was, I can't imagine that I would be up and operating in any capacity whatsoever after watching the person in the world that I love the most, and maybe the only person in the world who thought I was the greatest thing, drop dead. I mean, what if nobody ever feels that way about me again? but I was okay. And the reason I was okay was not because I'm a badass. I was okay because I was showing up to carry the message, which is the thing that I am uniquely qualified to do. And that there will be a time when one of you, I mean, I hope not, but of course it will, there will be one of you who the person you love most in the world drops dead in front of you. And then you will be able to say, I'm going to call up that old Amy Kitchen because she knows something about this. And so that's a gift. It's a gift that I have to offer you. And it's also a gift that you have to offer me. I mean, you know, together we can. It's really an awesome thing. All right, that's all I'm going to say.
I don't know about you guys, but I suffer from a terminal uniqueness. When I came into AA, I really just judged the crap out of you guys. I was better than you. I had my life together more than you people did. I hadn't lost all the stuff or given away all the stuff that you've given away or lost. I mean, hell, I have a degree. I've got multiple jobs. My car's paid off. Like, I came in here thinking I was still good. I had it together. I'm Paul Jeffries. Come on. And I would like listen to your stories and be like, oh God, you ate out of a dumpster? Like, who does that? And I was just like, man, I was just a judge a minute, just a judge a second. Pew, 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 just judge duty, bang, bang, overruled. I'm listening to you and I just think you guys are horrible human beings and idiots. For real. And that was, I had just burned my life to the ground. I can't stop drinking. Everything sucks, but I come in here and I put on this, like, I wear a tide work and I'm far superior to you. And it's just amazing to me, right? But guess what, dude? I started hearing my story, and I started hearing really, like, very specific things that I used to do. Like, weirdly specific. Things that I used to do, like sneaking a drink and cleaning the glass and putting it back in the cupboard. Oh, no. Apparently, I'm not the only one that's thought of this. Or, like, wait until somebody goes out of town and then drinking, but then taking the bottles and going to a recycling, like, way down the street. Because I'm a good guy. I recycle. But I'm going to do it, like, blocks away so nobody will ever know that that's in my recycling. And I started hearing these things. And eventually, my life got so terrible dry. I'm talking, like, oh, man, being dry. Like, guys, if you're an alcoholic and you just stop drinking and don't do this program, oh, P.S., awful. It is horrendous. I was for real just about to pull my skin off every day. I was just fist clenched, neck tight. My shoulders were in my ears. Everything sucks. You're an idiot. Ah! And I was losing it, dude. And finally, when I was hit in the head with a can of hairspray by my wife and I was like bleeding from the head and we had this knockdown, like this little yelling match and we were screaming at each other and she's like, aren't you supposed to do something in AA? She had started going to Al-Anon. It was awful for my alcoholism. I knew she was right and I asked the guy to be my sponsor. And I went walking around the mall with this guy and he of course, he's a good AA. He said, yeah, man, I got you. You want to go for a walk? You got time? I was like, sure. I couldn't lie to him because I did have time. So I walked with him, and we were walking around MacArthur Mall, and he happens to be Scottish, and there was a Celtic store. So we're walking around this Celtic store in there, and he's like, look at that broadsword. It's glorious. And he's like telling all these weird stories, but then he starts talking about his drinking. And he's like, do you ever just get so excited about drinking that you just almost like start shaking? And I was like, yeah, dude, all the time. Like, I love drinking. It's amazing. And he's like, yeah, do you ever get so drunk? And he just started kind of like asking me these qualifying questions and kind of telling me his story, but not really like just laying it on real thick. He was just trying to get my buy-in. And I started identifying with what he had to say. And then he said, hey, man, it sounds like you may have alcoholism. And I was like, oh, you're good. Like, you got me, man. He walked me right into my story. And he shared things about his life. You know, I've ended up knowing this guy for quite a few years, but he's shared things about his life that he's either not told anybody or only told a couple of people. And I've called him with really serious stuff that I have not ever told a soul in my life, ever, and promised to never say anything about. because I'm great at sweeping stuff under the rug. Unfortunately, I get some honesty and I get some other spiritual principles in this program, which kind of blew my ability to lie and hold secrets and live a double life. It kind of sucks. So I call him and I'm telling him these crazy, horrible things. And he's like, oh, that sounds fun. It's just that leveling of just like, man, you are not a unicorn running through the world. You're just an alcoholic. Your name's Paul. You're just a dude. You got bills to pay. You got a family. Welcome to the program. Right? Like, I needed that so badly because I thought I was so special. I was a nice guy that drank too much. And then I really realized I've got this thing. And the only thing that's going to fix me is me getting out of me through this program, which he was showing me when I first started, and I didn't know that until it was my turn. And I've had some of the best times of my life talking with other alcoholics. Man, I've never laughed so hard in my entire damn life. Some things that people do when they're drunk and or sober is friggin' hilarious. I mean, I've got some funny ones too, but like when you're ripping back and forth with somebody and you guys are really connecting, that's some special stuff, dude. I don't have that relationship with everybody in my life. Like, yeah, I'm super close with my wife, tighter than I'll ever be with anybody on earth, but you know, we don't have that type of, it's just different. It's not better, it's just different. And that connection, that like identifying piece is so, so important for me to drop my guard and be willing to accept what you guys are saying. Because I really came in with a lot of judgment and I've stayed and learned that I'm not special. I'm just a guy. And that's been so good for my life. All right, that's what I got.
Thank y'all. Next reading is on page 91 also. When he sees you know all about the drinking game, commence to describe yourself as an alcoholic. Tell him how baffled you were, how you finally learned that you were sick. Give him an account of the struggles you made to stop. Show him the mental twist which leads to the first drink of a spree. We suggest you do this as we have done it in the chapter on alcoholism. If he is alcoholic, he will understand you at once. He will match your mental inconsistencies with some of his own. If you are satisfied that he is a real alcoholic, begin to dwell on the hopeless feature of the malady. Show him from your own experience how the queer mental condition surrounding that first drink prevents normal functioning of the willpower. Don't at this stage refer to this book unless he has seen it and wishes to discuss it. And be careful not to brand him as an alcoholic. Let him draw his own conclusion. If he sticks to the idea that he can still control his drinking, tell him that possibly he can if he is not too alcoholic, but insist that if he is severely afflicted, there may be little chance he can recover by himself.
I totaled a car when I was 17 years old, and I flipped it in the middle of Atlantic Avenue in Virginia Beach and took out like a block of phone and electric lines. My father complained for years that he had to pay double overtime to VEPCO to put, you know, half the ocean front back together again. But I ended up in ASAP, and I went to my first meeting with a therapist or whatever person, and I had to sign a contract, and the contract said that for the duration of this ASAP program, which I think was 6 months, I will go to 3 meetings a week, I will go to group therapy, I will go to individual therapy, and I will not drink. And I signed the thing, and I was 100% sure it was going to be no big deal because I was going to avail myself of other substances. I did not think that it would matter at all. I really, really believed that. And that happened on a Monday afternoon. And by Friday morning at 3 a.m., I was loaded to the gills. Drunk, had no idea how I had gotten that drunk. And I called the person who was my ASAP liaison, and she had somebody come pick me up and take me to Maryview, and checked me in for rehab. But I tell this story when I'm working with others because this is the thing. This is the thing that captures my imagination, that makes it all fit for me when I read Bill's story, is when he's pounding on the bar saying, how did this happen? or when he's waking up saying, this had to end, because I had that experience. I was absolutely, there was not a doubt in my mind. And I'm willful. I mean, if I say I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it. You know, I mean, I'm going to do it to death probably, but I'm going to do it. I meant it. I meant it with everything in me. And I'm sure that I did not connect that it was a humbling experience at the time, but it was an experience that showed me that powerlessness really does mean what the big book says. It means I have lost control. I am beyond human aid. I do not have a choice. People always say alcohol is my drug of choice. No, it's my drug of no choice. I do not have a choice. I meant it when I signed that paper, and it wasn't even 5 days later. And I don't know how it happened. To this day, I don't know how I ended up drunk that night. And so I tell that to people that's the part of the story that I always get out as soon as possible, because that feature, that this is a hopeless condition of body and mind, that what I've got to work with in this life is a body that will never keep me from the second drink and a mind that will never keep me from the first. It's what I've got. I've got brown eyes. I kind of have blonde hair. I always wanted to be Ginger on Gilligan's Island. I wish I had... I wish I had red hair and green eyes, but I don't. It's what I've got, and I've got alcoholism too. I do not have power. Even if I want to believe that I do, even if I try really, really hard. And that is the thing that lets me know that I am an alcoholic, that I do belong in conversations with other alcoholics, and that expressing that this hopeless feature of the malady, that is the thing. I mean, I've gotten a little high-flying and talked about how I used to be a devil and now I'm not so bad anymore and God's gotten a hold of me and spiritual transformation is taking, you know, whatever, whatever. But that's totally unnecessary, because the thing that lit up my imagination, that opened up the possibility for me that as a person who never belonged anywhere, that I did in fact actually belong here, that is something that I have to offer another person. You know, hey, the bad news is you've got a death sentence. The good news is there's a solution. And the solution is going to be way beyond just not taking a drink. Because that would have been good. That really was good enough for me at the beginning. Just not being loaded all the time and being in trouble all of the time. You know, having to remember the lies. I just was worn out. But that would have been enough. And what I got was so much more. And there are 2 points in the big book that say he wouldn't go back if he could. Or even if he could drink again, he would not. And for years, I read those and I thought, you know, of course I would. If you told me that I could drink and nothing bad would ever happen, of course I would. I can honestly tell you today, no, I wouldn't. I wouldn't trade this. I wouldn't trade having a blueprint for living that cleans the decks for me, offers me a way to live present in the moment with a clear mind and a heart open to the possibilities of whatever springs up next in the universe. Because otherwise, not just being drunk and in trouble all the time, but what I have is a mind that sees the world as a hostile place and everyone is out to get me, so I've got to be on my toes to get you first. And it's just no way to live. And so this combines my favorite things. I get to talk about me, and I get to tell the absolute worst, which in fact turns out to be the absolute best thing. I'm an alcoholic. The worst thing is the best thing. Thanks.
Yeah, right on. You're a very good speaker. You're very passionate. I get caught up in it, and then I have to like re-get my thoughts together. Man, I'm just screwed when it comes to alcohol. And I know that because a sponsor showed me that. He showed me the patterns in my life. I always thought that I had a choice in when I drank. Like, I really did. Maybe when I was younger, I did, right? Like, because I couldn't get it, so I had to make the choice to make friends with the dishwasher at the restaurant I was working at and use my tip money to pay him to go get us beer. Like, I had to make those decisions, right? But sometime along the way, I really don't know when it happened. It doesn't matter because it's just a thing that happened. I stopped having a choice in drinking. Like, I kind of thought I did, but I just never did, man. And when I look back on it, I'm like, holy crap. I hadn't had a choice in a long, long time. I didn't have, you know, like a 40-year drinking career. That's fine. I don't need to have that. So if you're new and you're young, you don't need to have that. There's some really basic things that happen when you're drinking and when you stop, right? When you stop, if you feel worse, you're probably an alcoholic. I will tell you that. And I needed to know that. When I stop, I for real am, I am just a ticking, like, not time bomb. That sounds so ridiculous, but like, I'm gonna drink again, I guess. I'll just say it that way. I am 100% gonna drink again when I stop, when I don't have the solution in my life. 100%. No ifs, ands, or buts. Not even a question. It's gonna happen. I just don't know when. It might be on a rainy day when there's a hurricane coming, like drinking then. It might be a day where, like I've heard Dave say, when I break a shoelace, damn it, that's the last straw, I'm done. The last time I drank, I truly, 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 with 100% of my heart, wanted to just go have a beer. And I went over to Kogan's with a buddy of mine and his girlfriend, and we had the beer. And then once it touched my lips, dude, like, I get so damn excited. Like, I can't wait. Like, it's going to be fun. I don't know what's going to happen, but I'm pretty excited to be a part of it. And and I just start drinking, and I keep going. And then I start pointing to, like, top shelf scotch, because I'm a scotch guy now. And I'm like, and I get so drunk, I end up covered in throw up in the middle of the road under a truck bumper and not in the gutter. I'm talking, like, almost run over by all four wheels of this truck, just almost dead again. Like, that's not even sad, because it's not even the first time I almost died drinking. It's just the last time. And I woke up from that, and I was like, oh my God, dude, like, I did not, what happened? That wasn't the first time that's happened either. But I was just like, wow, what is going on, dude? What's going on? The only thing that was different that time was that I knew I was beat. I don't know if that makes sense. I knew that I was just like, man, I can't do this anymore. Like, I do this thing where I, like, build my life up, and then I drink and tear it down, and then I build it up, and then I tear it down, and I was just tired, dude. It's just like what you were saying. I'm just tired. Like, when I was done, I was just tired. Man, shit. I still came in and judged you guys for another year, but I was really tired of drinking the way that I was drinking and doing what I was doing. And then I came into the rooms, and I was judging you guys and listening to your stories. And I started getting these crazy ideas, dude. I was, like, months absent of alcohol. But I started thinking about, like, you know, what if my mom dies? Then people will understand, like, if I drink again. Mom's very healthy. She's a great woman. She's been in this program for, like, 30 years. Like, she's an amazing human being. Very healthy. Not even a cloud in the sky. What if my mom dies? What if my wife's disease gets bad enough that people will understand if I can't take it? I start bargaining with myself, right? And I start, like, thinking, well, I can't not drink forever. I mean, I'm gonna go to Italy someday. Like, I'll be, like, at a restaurant on a cliff, like, eating some rabbit stew. It's gonna be in Tuscany somewhere. And I'll be eating rabbit stew, and I'll need, like, a red wine with that. Like, that's what you do. And I started, like, I just started having these crazy thoughts, dude. I didn't wanna drink again, but I was thinking about how I was gonna drink again and when it would be okay. Because by this time, the cat's out of the bag. But Paul's an alcoholic. Everybody knows that. But I don't. And I'm like, it makes sense. And I didn't know that, but my brain, dude, is slowly working me towards a drink, always. I didn't know that. And it says it's cunning, baffling, strong, whatever it says. And my sponsor always said, put a little carrot in there and say, patient. Because it's always in there, guys. You don't just, like, go through the steps and then, yay, you're healed. Not a thing. This is a lifelong thing for me. I know that I'm going to always be screwed when it comes to alcohol. And if I'm not doing this program and living this thing as the center hub of the wheel of my life, I am just counting down the days till I drink again. Now, how do I know that? Because I have a great sponsor who has sponsored tons of people and has a sponsor and has told me these stories. I've seen these things play out with people that I've tried to help. they, once you stop doing this, you're either moving forward or you're moving backwards, right? Like, it's a real simple analogy. You're either moving away from a drink or towards one. Like, that was said to me really early on, and I was like, that's so simple. And I still judged you for another year. But the thing is like, you're either moving away or towards a drink. Choice is yours. But I don't know that. I need somebody to tell me that. I'm not smart like that. I think I got it at all times. I don't know that I don't have it. I know I have it, right? Like, that's my mindset that I bring to the table. And that just that fact that I am going to be screwed forever sounds terrible. I find that very comforting. I really do. I need that. I need to be constantly reminded that I am going to drink and I'm going to die drinking, and it'll probably be alone, if I'm being honest with you. Or, like you were saying, I could work this program, have a great life, a happy family, and be useful to people. That sounds nice, but I don't know that. And I just want to wrap it up because I know we got another reading, but this thing about helping other people, you can only help people that are there, right? Like, my sponsor says it, and it sounds horrible, and I thought he was a terrible human being for saying this, but I'm going to say it. He's like, hey, man, we're pizza delivery guys. We're going to bring the pizza of AA. If they want it, they'll eat it. If not, we'll step over the body and go to the next guy who looks hungry. And that sounds horrible, but it's kind of just the truth. Like, all I have is experience, strength, and hope from a program that was written way before I was born. I'm just trying to transmit this thing, and if somebody doesn't want it, that's okay. Totally fine. I'll be here when you come back. But we just keep kind of trying to bring the message, man. And through that, I've learned more about my own self and my alcoholism than I would have ever known doing self-study by myself, drinking. That's what I got for that.
Thank y'all. And the final reading is on page 92. Continue to speak of alcoholism as an illness, a fatal malady. Talk about the conditions of body and mind which accompany it. Keep his attention focused mainly on your personal experience. Explain that many are doomed who never realize their predicament. Doctors are rightly loath to tell alcoholic patients the whole story unless it will serve some good purpose. But you may talk to him about the hopelessness of alcoholism because you offer a solution. You will soon have your friend admitting he has many, if not all, of the traits of the alcoholic. If his own doctor is willing to tell him that he is alcoholic, so much the better. Even though your protege may not have entirely admitted his condition, he has become very curious to know how you got well. Let him ask you that question if he will. Tell him exactly what happened to you. Stress the spiritual feature freely. If the man be agnostic or atheist, make it emphatic that he does not have to agree with your conception of God. He can choose any conception he likes, provided it makes sense to him. The main thing is that he be willing to believe in a power greater than himself and that he live by spiritual principles.
Mm-hmm. I guess this is the third meeting. I guess that doesn't really matter. The second or the third meeting, and so now is the time to pull out the spiritual stuff. And this is where it's really important for me to have worked with a sponsor and to be actively working the steps myself, because I like to have theoretical conversations. I will shoot the crap all day long about philosophical stuff and, you know, just basically taking my big brain for a lap around the block so that you can see how smart I am. I can feel smart, and it just works for me. And it is very important. Judeo-Christian thought would say that you have to have a community. It's the body of believers. The Buddhists would say that you do things within your sangha, within your community. I cannot just go high-flying in spiritual stuff on my own. I need to run it by other people. Because honestly, I could be telling myself that God's voice sounds like Elvis's, and every time I hear a rock song, that's telling me what to do. Those are my marching orders. I need to have had this transmitted to me. I need to have had some experience in this, and I need to continue bouncing this back and forth with other people, because I think I hear God all the time, and God's voice is suspiciously like my own. And I think I'm pretty smart, and I'm usually going to go ahead and tell you what I think, and I'm going to be proud of myself that I was helpful and I was honest, and you know, blah blah snore. It's the same story all the time. It's all about me, and then there's blood on the floor and somebody's crying. So for me to be able to get to this point with another person, it is imperative that I have been doing this work, that I am a part of a fellowship, that I have participated, that I'm just not I'm not spontaneously generating stuff up in my head and then passing it on to somebody else because it makes sense to me or it's common sense to me. In fact, the big book says that really how I'm supposed to be operating now is on uncommon sense. And part of that is that I do not do this work in a vacuum. That is why we say in meetings, I have a sponsor who has a sponsor, because I'm connected up, I'm connected down, you know. My head may be in the clouds, but my feet are on the ground, and there are people linking arms all around me. I cannot, because basically what's going to happen is if I'm saying I can sponsor, or if I'm carrying the message to other people, I am carrying the mess. I am not carrying a message. I am carrying the self-centered gyrations of my mind, and I'm telling you how smart I am and proving to you that I can micromanage your life and I do a better job of it than you would, except for the fact that I have a disease, which means my life is unmanageable, especially when managed by me. So I cannot be carrying that kind of message to other people. Basically, all I can be carrying to anyone else is, this is my experience. And when the time comes that somebody says, well, what about blah, blah, blah? If I don't have any experience with it, I'm going to have to say, I don't know. Like the worst words in the English language to me. I hate to say, I don't know. But there's a lot of stuff I don't know. And I need to be able to do that. I need to have a foundation here that is solid enough that I can say, I don't know. That I can say, let me run that by my sponsor. So I am not just sitting down in these one-on-one situations telling people what I think I know. Because what I think I know is just what I think. It's not what I know. What I know is what I'm living. And sometimes what I'm living is not the greatest thing of all. So I am inclined to be a little dishonest when vulnerable and tell you something that sounds good. But it's only what I think. It's not what I know. And so I am not going to be reaching out a hand to help someone who could die. I am participating in the trouble. I have no idea why I got on that, but that's really all I have to say. Right on. All right.
Oh, 5 minutes. Okay. Yes, this is a deadly disease, right? Like, if it says it like 7 times in this reading, for God's sakes, we are gonna die from this. Now, here's the tricky part. Some of us will die real quick. We'll get liver disease or some other terrible thing that comes along with drinking. Or how I perceive things to happen in my own personal situation, I will drink until I'm alone, right? Like, I'll drink while I have a family. I'll drink them away. I'll drink all my closest friends away. I'll drink all of my family away. I'll end up by myself and then live another 70 years. That sounds terrible, but that's what would happen. Like, that's what I bring to the table. Like, I know that. If I stop doing AA, eventually I am going to drink again. And if not, I will be so alone that I'll have no choice but to drink again. That's just it. It sounds sad, because it is. The other side of that, though, is that it does not have to be that. You can't come to an AA meeting and not hear somebody laugh, like, harder than they have all week. Like, you can't come to an AA meeting and see people not smiling and laughing at each other and having a good time. That's not a thing. This is not a sad, glum thing. Oh, we're all gonna die. Like, yes, that's an eventual outcome of everybody's life, and some of us will get there quicker than others if we drink, but we don't have to drink. because that's never been the problem in the first place. I don't have an alcohol problem, I have a sober problem. If that sounds weird to you, stick around. It's okay. It sounded weird to me too. I have a disease that is gonna always talk me back into a drink. My brain is trying to get me, dude. It's always trying to get me back into a drink. The only thing I have is this program and a spiritual relationship, which, oh man, I really didn't want that to be a part of this. It's not that I had anything against God. I just didn't want that to be the answer. I wanted to be able to work at it. Because I might not have a good spiritual base, but damn it, I've got a good work ethic. Like, I will put my head down and make some stuff happen. I'm just that guy, right? If I'm like, hey man, I need to do the flower beds, every single weed's out of there, all the mulch is out. Yeah. I've got weed blocker down, fresh mulch on. I'm weed whacking around the edges, mm-hmm. and everybody's thinking, my God, look at Paul's garden. Yeah. So, like, that's what I bring to the table. That's who I am, right? And I just thought I could handle this. If I did AA good enough, I'd be good to go. And I got super miserable in AA. Oh no. Because I was still trying to run the show. I was doing the parts of AA that were convenient for my life, and I was doing things that you guys saw, like helping other people. I love that you keep talking about the ego feeding, because that's why I wanted to help people in the first place, because I wanted to look good. Like, I had AA in the bag. I wanted people to be like, damn, Paul's got it. I didn't have anything. So I didn't sponsor people for a long time because nobody asked me, because I didn't have anything to give them. And then I started having this experience a while back, and I've had this kind of spiritual experience, and it's come over time, and it's been really painful to get to for me personally, because I'm not the educational variety. I'm like the special educational variety. I am just so slow. But the thing is that I didn't drink for however many years it took. I stayed in the program. I stayed a part of this thing. And that's the point. And the reason I'm bringing that up is because my sponsor made it very, very clear to me. And the reason I keep talking about my sponsor is because that's what we're talking about. And that guy saved my friggin' life and is always there. Always, when I need it. Always there. And so he said really early on, because he knew I was going to complicate it, because I'm not a great thinker. I went to art school, and when I got out of there, I was like, oh, I'm done with critical thought. No more of that for the rest of my life. I just want to be simple. And he knew that. And he knew that I would complicate it, and so he made it simple. He's like, hey, man, can you solve this thing? Like, has your whole experience proven to you that you can solve this thing? I was like, nah, man. He's like, all right, cool. Are you God? And I was like, nah, man, I'm not. He's like, all right, well, is AA bigger than you? And I was like, yeah. Like, I could only make one word answers. He was like, yeah. And he goes, all right, man, can you just like turn your will and your life over to AA and just do what we do? And I was like, yeah, dude, I can try that. That's he made it so easy for me to make a start, right? And that's what we're talking about here. It said the main thing is that he'd be willing to believe in a power greater than himself. This program is a power greater than me, for sure. You guys collectively have stayed sober a hell of a lot longer than I was when I came in here. And this, I've seen this save, I don't know, I'd be making up a number, but lots of people. I've seen it just, people just pop open like they're just newly hatched chicks. They're just, their eyes are so open. They're like, oh my God, the world, I can't believe it. It's so amazing to see that in people. And man, I got all caught on that visual of the chicken. Anyways, The thing that I'm trying to get across is, like you were saying, the collective. This is, I need it to be really simple, so he gave me a simple thing. He's like, hey man, imagine AA is a herd of wildebeests just running down the plains. And I was like, okay, I'm there. He's like, imagine that they come to a river crossing. I was like, okay, I got it, big river. He's like, they go in, alligators everywhere. He's like, do you think the guy that's in the middle of the herd gets eaten? Or is the guy on the periphery that's just kind of doing his own thing, kind of like veering off course, which one gets snapped up by the alligator? And I was like, that guy. And I was like, he's like, yeah, man, stay in the middle of the herd. That's the best analogy I can think of this thing, because like you said, together we're stronger, right? If I'm in the middle of this thing, I'm not getting picked off, because I'm in it. I'm in a solution with you guys. When I get my own ideas and I start doing weird stuff, like, see you later. Who knows what's going to happen? But it has been the absolute biggest pleasure in my life to help people learn that stuff. It's been the absolute best most amazing thing to be sponsored by somebody who gave a crap about me, who taught me about this disease. Now I can transmit it to other people and I can bring this into my life? Are you kidding me? That's amazing. I just thought I was coming here to not drink. That's a good return on investment, I would say. Fiduciary terms. Okay, that's it.
Thank you guys so much. Let's thank our panel. Alrighty. I'm gonna now pass the seventh tradition basket. The seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, thank you. The seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, which is to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. Are there any AA-related announcements? Ashton.
My name's Ashton. I'm an alcoholic.
Yeah.
Ashton.
The Southeast Regional Conference of Young People and Alcoholics Anonymous is going down June 1st to the 4th in St. Petersburg, Florida. Virginia has a bid, and we're going down there to try to bring the conference up here for next year. And our next business meeting assembly on the 9th, which is Sunday, at noon, at the end of the assembly. So we have service positions available, things that are going on that entire weekend to be of service too, so if you're looking to get in the middle of the herd,
yeah.
Did it. You did it.
Thanks for sharing. Any other announcements? I have one. This home group is going to be having supper and a speaker Monday, April 3rd. 6 p.m. potluck, bring a dish if you wish. And at 7 p.m., Evan C. from Charlotte is going to be in town speaking. So we'd love to have you guys. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Alrighty, is there anyone here in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you. Yes, sir.
Stephen.
Hey, Stephen.
Hi, Stephen. Welcome.
Anybody else? Christine, alcoholic.
Hey, Christine.
Hi, Christine. Welcome.
Brad?
Brad.
Hi, Brad.
Hi,
Brad.
Brad.
Welcome.
Yes,
sir. Johnny. Hi, Johnny.
Welcome, buddy.
Anybody else? Great. Glad to have you guys. There is literature available over there. Please see me or any home group member after the meeting if you'd like to purchase a big book. Sponsorship question. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship in AA, I will be available at this table after we close the meeting. Please feel free to come up and talk to me. Reminder, smokers, please use the butt can provided outside. Stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, www.simpleactions.net. In closing, let's thank our panel again.
You did it!
Thanks to all who participated. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on step 12 at the meeting after the meeting, which will be at Plaza del Sol, just past the train tracks on Colonial. It's a little Mexican restaurant. And could I have a volunteer to read the last two paragraphs? David?
Hi, everybody. I'm an alcoholic. My name's David.
Hey, David. David.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thank you. All those who like, help me close with the Lord's Prayer.
God bless you. Awesome.
So beautiful.
Our Father.
Our Father. Who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread. Forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power and the glory, forever. Amen.
Get work.